Hola, mi gente. The moment you've been waiting for is finally here. My brand new book, Financially Lit, is officially out. And I can't wait for you to get your copy. Inside this book, I'm bringing you culturally relevant and relatable personal finance advice that will allow you to finally feel seen, heard, and understood. Whether it's the guilt you feel from being the first person to make it while members of your family are still struggling, or the way that financial trauma manifests itself in negative and limiting beliefs around money, Financially Lit is here to guide you through it all. Just a few years ago, it was almost impossible to find personal finance books written for first-generation wealth-building Latinas. We have been forced to navigate the complicated world of money with a bunch of money books written by old white dudes who don't understand what it's like for us first-gen kids. But that stops right here, right now. Inside Financially Lit, you will learn how to set boundaries with your familia, with your dinero, create and pass on generational wealth, diversify and increase your income, protect yourself from financial abuse, navigate the complicated relationship between amor and dinero, invest like a white dude or better, and so much more. You can get your hard copy and audiobook version of Financially Lit at financiallylitbook.com, and make sure to join our email list so you can find out when I'm stopping in a city near you for the Financially Lit book tour. See you soon.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
So, do you think that the American dream is dead?
I do. I want it to die. Well, I also think we've distorted the definition. The original definition is not a bad one. It's about opportunity. It doesn't say anything about these metrics. It doesn't say anything about being married or having a job by a certain age, we've gotten the promotion, all those chisme things. But that's why it's different for everyone. I think the cookie cutter American dream, how we've defined it in society, is dead. And it's also a stat I give is that 4 million Latinos suffered through depression. A lot of them from suicidal ideation as well, right? Because the people who are making the American dream are miserable because they're like, I just did everything my parents told me to do. And now who am I? And then there's the people who haven't made it. And now it's harder and harder with this economy, right? And then they're like frustrated and they're like, well, I haven't made these metrics, but maybe it's not the metrics that's important. Okay, you can't own a house in the US, but you can own one in the DR. We need to get away from it only works if it's in this model. That's when I think it's dead. All of us have different paths. Does that even make us happy? And I think it's time to go after the life we want to create, because when we're doing that, we're more there and present for others. And I really think if we were actually doing what's aligned with us, we can make more of a difference.
You're listening to Yo Quiero Dinero, a personal finance podcast for the modern Latina. I'm your host, Janice Torres, award-winning Latina personal finance expert. I didn't always have my financial shit together, but when I started looking for POC-friendly personal finance podcasts, I couldn't find any. And so Yo Quiero Dinero was born. On this show, I'll show you how to make dinero, how to keep your dinero, and most importantly, how to make it grow. Each week, I'm connecting you with the most brilliant minds in the world of money and business, so you can learn about investing, entrepreneurship, and building wealth. The best part? I'm dishing up all this knowledge with a sassy side of sazón. So if you're ready to be poderosa with your dinero, you've come to the right place. Let's dive in. Before we hop into today's conversation, I want to remind you to follow us on social. If you're loving this podcast and you want more community, you want to find out more about our events and all the stuff that we have going on behind the scenes, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and everywhere else you love to hang out on the internet. If you're loving this podcast, please take a moment to leave us a review if you listen to us on Apple. It's the easiest way to share our podcast with people that you know and love, and it helps us get discovered by amazing listeners like you. So take a moment, leave us a review, share us with your friends and family, subscribe so that you never miss an episode, and make sure to check out our blog, YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com, where you can sign up for our email list and you'll never miss an episode. Plus, you get exclusive invitations to our live events, special discounts for our digital courses, And as always, our best personal finance tips and advice to help you be poderosa with your dinero. Thanks for listening. Now, let's get into the episode. Welcome back to the show, mi gente. This is Yo Quiero Dinero. And on today's show, we're going to have an incredible woman who has so many things in common with my own journey of just realizing that you're following this checklist of life. And then you're like, why the fuck am I doing this? And you dismantle it and start all over and then some. So Esther, welcome to the show. Super excited to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Absolutely. So let's start off with an introduction. Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do, and then we'll dive into your backstory and kind of how you got to where you are today.
Yeah. So I like to say I'm in the business of impacting lives. And how I do that is I help people discover their purpose, like their real why, the path to get there, and to keep it going. You know, that's really hard. A lot of people give up. So that's what I dedicate my life to. And then I'm Nicaraguan born. I'm Latina. And I grew up in Miami. So I'm very Miami.
We love Miami.
And I spent a lot of time in Santo Domingo. So I go between the Dominican Republic and Miami.
Amazing. Okay. So like I mentioned at the top of the show, this was not the plan. So take us back in time. Take us back to maybe even your childhood. Kind of what were those narratives that you think fed into you, quote unquote, doing the good things, doing the right things?
Oh, yeah. That starts when I'm like two. At that time, we were in Nicaragua and I got really sick. And my parents were trying to figure out how to, they said that I only had 3 weeks to live. So my parents went all over Costa Rica, Honduras, Nicaragua, and they were trying to figure it out and no one could cure me. So my dad's not religious, but he's spiritual. And he was like, we're going to play the lottery, la loteria. And they still play all the time. Right? And they're like, we're going to play a lot. And the story goes is that I chose the numbers and we win. But this shows you how the system is, though, right? We win. But then the only place to cure me is Miami. So they have to pay cash for my whole entire medical intervention. And I was there for months. So there went the entire lottery winnings, right? One, with the conversion exchange. And then two, with paying cash in a hospital as an international patient. So we come back. And, you know, my parents had at that time prominent positions, all these things. We come back and then the Civil War is happening. Things are going down and they take everything away from my parents and we have to immigrate to the United States. Okay. So that's where my story starts, really, because then I get to the U.S. and by first we started in California and I felt everything was the narratives of we saved Esther's life. You know, instead we saved it, right? So then I felt we lived paycheck to paycheck. Working class, you know, my mom gift wrapped at Macy's, you know, my dad had multiple jobs, you know, the whole thing. So I learned how to be what the coupon queen, figuring out how to help my parents save money. And then I had to be the perfect child because I felt that I couldn't be a burden to them. I was already a burden at two. And so that was already ingrained in there that I had to be the perfect child, the people pleaser, and help them fix their situation. Because of that, then I was like, okay, well, I need to figure out how to repay them, how to get us out of here. And also all the narratives, right, that you have to do well for your parents, that, you know, that the narrative of we're here and now you can't waste this opportunity.
Make the sacrifice worth it.
Yes. All those things. Exactly. So then, you know, we moved to Miami and again, you know, we're struggling. You know, my dad had to go back to work in Nicaragua because he couldn't find good work in Miami. And so, you know, juggling all that, right? And so then I did it. I did all the perfect things. I got the full scholarship to Swarthmore. And then in Swarthmore, had six jobs while figuring out how to do well. The craziness, right? And then I go get a PhD. And it's like, I'm still like, okay, well, I got to have the doctor in front of my name and all the check marks. And then, of course, I was always like, I remember getting my PhD. And I remember that being one of the days that was the emptiest. And I was like, not understanding why. I'm like, wait, I'm supposed to feel that this amazing cloud of joy over me and this amazing moment because I've been working for it for years. And then when I got the certificate, I was more excited because I helped my dad finish, which is a whole other story that I took on his own purpose and his own goals, right? But I had them both in my hand and I was so excited for him. But for me, I was like, really? This was it, right? And but why though? I didn't celebrate it at all during the process. I was just fixated on finishing, fixated on this check mark, fixated on getting this title. And then I was like, oh, I know what it is. I don't feel 100% because I'm not married yet, right? You have to be married before 30. That's what's missing. So then I go get married because at the time, again, same narratives, right? I wanted to live with my boyfriend. I wanted to do stuff. And they were like, no, you can't do that. Apariencias. Women don't live with their boyfriends. Those things, right? So we get married. And it's not that he was a bad guy, but he wasn't the guy for me. And it wasn't a partnership. It was very, you know, machista, very in these narratives and his family and everything. And we were living in Miami. And I was like, oh, it's terrible. But why was I fixated on the check marks? And I remember, like, then I was like, well, it must be now that I haven't climbed the ladder at work. That's what it is. So then I go and climb the ladder until I get this position. Then I'm sitting there. That's when I hit rock bottom. I'm sitting there with a wall full of 30 awards, the check marks, whole thing. And then, oh, and by the way, I missed the part that then I got divorced, right? Because of course I wasn't going to worry. First my family to get divorced. They stopped talking to me, whole thing. And, you know, it's a lot there. And then I'm sitting there going, oh my God, I am living in this 5-bedroom house. I have this salary. I have the American dream. I have all of it, you know, and then I had gone remarried, but actually to the right person this time. But I had all of the things and the 2 children, the whole thing, the whole package. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, I am so misaligned. I'm so miserable. And it's not like I was not making impact in my job. I was, but it wasn't where I wanted to be. It wasn't my legacy. And I remember trying to start this conversation with my family. And I go home and I'm like, oh, Dad, I'm starting to think that this is not in alignment with me and all these things. And he's like, what do you mean? You have a job everyone wants. What did you do? That was the converse. That was the question. What did you do? And I was like, what do you mean? What did I do? Es que sos rebelde. You have to put your head down and work. You're always trying to do change things. And I was like, exactly. That's who I am. I like to change things. I'm trailblazer. I'm innovative. And he's like, no, but you should just be happy and grateful. You've already impacted thousands. And then this is the first time like I really yell out and shout at him in front of everybody and everyone's staring at me. And I was like, that's not my legacy. And they were like, whoa. But it wasn't my legacy. It's not anything I wanted. And at the end of the day, I had all this stuff, but I was like everyone's bank account. I had the stress of supporting all these people and even like people who worked for me and staff, even like family, everyone asking me for money all the time. It was just so overwhelming because I hadn't dealt with the people pleasing. I hadn't dealt with the perfection. I hadn't dealt with any of that stuff. So even when I had made the American dream, I didn't even know what to do with it. So I then decided I needed to leave. Like, this is not my life. And so I made an exit plan. That's what I love about like everything you have on your podcast and your channel, everything. So I was like, yes, yes, yes. That's exactly what I did. I was like, exit plan. I'm out of here. But I had to do it like in a way that would feel, I had to transition my family, everybody, the expectations. Hey, I'm not going to be a bank account anymore. Hey, I can't do everything anymore. I need to start like thinking about me, what I want to do. And then even my colleagues, they were like, what do you mean? You don't leave this. You don't leave this job. Everybody wants this job. And you only have X years to pension. I'm like, yeah, but that's still X years to pension. I need to live now. And then what really like made me just exit was that I had this best friend. And with her, I was my authentic self. That's when we would talk about business ideas and all those things. You know, you always have one person that you share. And I was sharing all my authentic self with her. And then one day she had these migraines. And I was, so funny story, she was also my hairdresser. And I was like, she's like, I really need to fundraise for my surgery. So I help her fundraise and everything. And then she goes in for her operation. I'm like, oh, I'll see you next week. She comes back and she doesn't make it out. And when I go to her funeral, you know, this is in Latin America, I was so angry because the whole funeral was about what's going to happen when we die, like where are we going, and not about her legacy, her impact, the amazing, vibrant person I knew. And then I was like, I got to just do it now for the both of us. And I'm not going to continue like waiting another year. I'm doing it now. And that's what I did. I took the chance and I left 6 weeks later. And I was like, I hadn't finished my full transition, but I was like, you have to live now. And I had to get over the fear of the scarcity mindset that I wasn't going to make any money or I wasn't going to find opportunities. No, we all have a unique how-to. We all have skills and things. And I had to like push through that. And so then that's what I did. I left and then I started the company I have now.
Wow. Well, that is quite the journey. Okay. And it's like, I feel like I'm listening to someone tell a portion of my story. It's just like you are hitting those milestones. You are the first to achieve all these incredible things in your family. And then you have this moment of like reconciliation with like, whose life am I living? Because this is not mine. So when you first confront that realization, it can be startling. It can be just like, you don't even know what to do with those emotions. So how does one begin to process those in a way that gives some level of clarity, right? Because I think it's much easier to just kind of squash those feelings down and be like, no, it's fine. We'll do it. We'll get through it. We'll trudge along. Because that's what we've seen so many people in our families do.
Exactly. No, and for me, it was like thinking about like those feelings. I would think about it like the voice. Like that voice never went away. You know, that voice of like, Esther, you can do it. You can do something on your own. Because I had raised $100 million for somebody else. And I remember sitting there, even the voice going, maybe, Esther, you could do this for yourself. You know, have you ever thought about that? Or I would look at people, you know, on TV, in entrepreneurship, and I was like, why am I not trying that alone? And it was always there. And the thing is, that's what I was silencing because of fear, because of everything. That voice always telling me, there's more, there's something else, Esther, something else. But I was always afraid of losing everything I've built and then afraid of disappointing others, right? And it was all around other people and the scarcity mindset. And so what helped me though was really being clear. Like I put in my workbook very clear was like, let me just write my obituary and then I'm going to rewrite it. And that tells me right there what I'm not doing, smack in the face. And that was like the first exercise. And it's like the first exercise I do people because that right there told me, well, my obituary didn't say anything about staying in my pension job, right? It didn't say anything about that. It said, you're changing the narrative. You're helping people be okay to go after what they want. Because at the end of the day, I was helping everyone else do that because I was too scared to do it for myself. I was helping everyone else around me. And I'm like, Esther, you've helped everyone else. You can do it yourself. Like keeping that vision in sight, reminding myself, that's my legacy. That's my North Star. That's what I need to do. And then the second thing was going, believing that I could, like actually like letting it go and be like, wait, let me outline. I have a unique way of solving problems and it's not tied to this job. It's tied to all sorts of things. So knowing my own value add. So that way, because it's true, like what you said, when I started the journey, it's not like I had a million supporters around me. I actually had the opposite, right? It was,
everybody's telling like, you're crazy. That's it.
Exactly. Tuta loca. You're crazy. You're going to go. And they were all like, is there disclaimers that you can go back to your job? Like and I did. I had tenure in the job. They were like, okay, good, good. Because you can go back after you go through this midlife crisis thing, awakening you're having, you know? And they were like, you have your safety nets. And I was like, I cannot think about if I do that, then I won't actually take the risks I want to make. But that's all the voices were like, you're crazy. It's not like you have a mountain of supporters. So I had to have something bigger for me, that vision, and remind myself every time I have a vision, I make it happen. I just had the wrong visions before. The wrong visions before were about the American dream. Now the vision has to be about what I want to create. And if I've been able to do that for everyone else and for that one cookie cutter checklist, I can do it for what I want to do it. And so I had to push through and put in my daily routines. That's what I mean about keep it going. It's not just when you hit rock bottom. I had to put in my everyday, what's going to help me chug this along? Because those voices are around you every day at first until you make your success and then everyone's asking you to help them, right?
How did you do it, right? Everyone asks, what are you doing until you do it? And then they ask you, how did you do it? That's it.
Yep.
Okay. So I think another thing that I was not mentally prepared for was almost like the grieving process that you have to go through to let go of this identity that you are shedding when you make this change, when you make this transition. How did that look for you?
That was hard because I went from my last job, I was a diplomat, I was a public figure. And it was really difficult to transition that because there were some positives in that. Well, one, I had access to different levels. I had access to government, price secretary. I had represented something. I could walk into a room and have instant access. Now I was like, okay, now I'm by myself, no affiliation. And it took some while to be like, okay, I am more than my title. I am more than that position, more than that job. But grieving that a little bit, grieving that access, that impact I could have instantaneously just by walking in the room from having that, I had to grieve it. But at the same time, remember that it's a short-term grief because I was grieving that. But at the end of the day, my voice was always in there when I had that because I was representing someone else. And I was like, I just need patience because one day I'll be able to have more impact using my own name. And it was like having that road map in place going, also remember the negative of it. The negative came with hyper scrutiny, you know, and being the only Latina in that space, right? It was like one of the few, it's any mistake I made was hyper exemplified everything. And I was like, remember the negative of that and remember the positive that you're gaining and also setting new expectations because even that transition, people are still looking for you in your old identity. And I was like, wait, no, I want to be sought out for this now. I want to be sought out for X now, you know, like I'm no longer doing that anymore. So definitely that took some time for other, not just myself, for other people to get used to as well. But then, and finding the umbrella of, I was always that person there, right? So it's not that big of a switch. It's just how I'm doing it is, where I'm doing it is changed, but not the how.
Yeah, absolutely. In my head, I feel at least like entrepreneurship is like the ultimate personal development journey. It just forces you to like confront all of these limiting beliefs that you've been programmed with, etc. One of the things that I had to unpack is this idea that like you can't enjoy what you do for work if you want to make a lot of money. I don't know why. Like it always just felt like you're either going to make a lot of money, but then you're not going to have time with your family, or you're not going to make a lot of money and then you can have more time. There was just this overarching idea of like work is not supposed to be fun. How do we unpack those narratives? Because I think they're even fed to us by like the media and shit like that, right? You watch all those like office comedy shows and everybody fucking hates their job. So it's almost like normalized that we should not enjoy this, but it's also the thing that you spend most of your life doing.
Exactly. No, I used to hear those narratives too, like, no te hagas ilusiones. Oh, like you're just being naive. And work, that the word work really means work. It's not supposed to be fun or enjoyable. But for me, I have work-life integration. It's not a separate thing. And so, you know, even in my last gig, I was working 15-hour days, but half of it was like not enjoyable. And I was like, there has to be different. There has to be more. And I remember though, everyone around me said, no way, your job is just a job. That's what it is. And you have your life outside. And I'm like, I can't do that because I can't separate it. And I remember everyone thinking I was crazy, but it's not true because now I have full work-life integration and I enjoy what I do. Yes, are there mundane tasks in entrepreneurship? Absolutely. But they feed into a larger impact, which is you and what you want to achieve. And I agree with you that the entrepreneurship has tested all of me from who am I? Any fear I had before, any self-conscious thing I had in my head is magnified. And the book journey, at first I didn't want to share my story. And I think that was the ultimate growth for me of being like, I got to put out my full story, the messy, the ugly, the good, all of it, and not be afraid. And I think that's so hard too, because we're taught in our culture, esto se queda en casa. You don't talk about money and issues. You know, I talk about that I went through depression as a teenager. You know, I share all of it. And even I criticize our systems and stuff. And they're like, you don't do that. And especially like my family's immigrants, they're like, what if, you know, all the fears, what if you lose your citizenship by saying these things? No, I'm like, that's not going to happen. But it's all the, yeah.
Yeah. I feel like we are part of a generation that is almost in a way privileged to question the systems because we're coming into them from a different place. We're not being asked to just survive. We're not being tasked with that job. That job was done by our parents. And now it's like we almost have this responsibility to reach that self-actualization that our ancestors could not because they were in that place of survival. So when people ask me like, where do you get the guts to like do shit like this, like what you're doing? It's like, how can I not? Because all of those dreams that were left behind by the people who've come before me,
that's the injustice that I can't continue to perpetuate. It's like almost a responsibility to achieve more and do more and not settle for the shit that others had to settle for.
Exactly. And we can be these voices now and have these platforms that I don't think they could have even dreamed about that it would have existed back then.
Yeah.
Or had the courage to.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. They didn't even realize what was possible because you can't, right? When you think about just like Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you're just like trying to survive. You don't really have the space to dream and ideate and think about what the future could hold. So your book is called Creating Your Limitless Life. What does that mean, actually?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think about your goals. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you should absolutely get Babbel. You don't need to pay hundreds of dollars to private tutors or waste hours on apps that really don't help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Just like the information that we share here on Yo Quiero Dinero, Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so that you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Babbel's convenient courses have helped me learn real-life French conversational skills. I was so intimidated by the French language the first time that I visited Paris, but with Babbel's help, I learned how to order food, ask for directions, all without having to consult a random language app while I'm on vacation. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 50% off a one-time payment for a lifetime Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/dinero. Get 50% off at babbel.com/dinero, spelled babbel.com/dinero. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Yeah, and I have Chasing the American Dream crossed out because it's your own limitless life. And I think like so many times we think our visions, when we're, you know, I have people like, okay, let's visualize it. What do you see yourself 20 years? Everyone's like, oh, but that's so impossible. That's outside my reach. And that's what I mean by limitless. It's like your vision you can make into reality. You just got to plan it out and let's break it down into steps and move towards it. And everybody's limitless life is completely different because it's your own vision. It's your own legacy. But we need to push ourselves to believe that it's possible. When I give like talks to students, I'm like, look, I mean, I was chasing the wrong thing. I was chasing the American dream. And that was my vision as a child, right? To be able to provide financial stability. My parents would always fight about money. And I was like, I want a life where that's not a issue. You know, that's not reality, right? And so that was my vision then. And also to travel the world. And I remember everyone laughed at me then. I tell them, you know, if I go back 20 years, well, my vision was 20 years ago, people would laugh at me now. And then when I was like at that age, 20 years before that, let's say, well, and then I would have been a baby, well, you know what I mean? Like 10 years, they would have been laughing at me because I was like, I'm going to travel the world, right? And I'm here, you know, in Miami, Disney World. They're like, no, you're not. You're like, you're crazy. You're going to go to like 2 countries, maybe. You know what I mean? They're like, no, you're not. And I was like, yes, I am. And I would read these books and study and I'm going to figure it out. And I started traveling 17, figuring out like travel deals, hustling. I'm like, I'm going to volunteer for things. I'm going to like, you know, in snail mail, figure it out. But I put that vision. I'm like, I see myself traveling. I am going to make it happen. And it's whatever your limitless life is, whatever that vision is of like how the life you want, whether it's geographic freedom, whether it's financial freedom, whether some people are like, I want to be in this community and have this life. You can have anything. you want. And I've seen it, you know, I've seen it with other people and I've even seen it with myself. When I actually have a vision, I go for it. Anything is possible. And it's also like broadening our reach, right? We always think like, we can only do five things because I only studied these five things, or I only know this one skill. But I'm like, your how-to has nothing to do with what you studied. Your study is like, sure, extra knowledge, technical skills, but your unique how-to, like your friends don't come to you for a solution and help you because of some title you have or because something you studied. I have this exercise I give to people. I want you to reach out to five people in your life through different generations, different countries, if you can, different locations. And ask them how you impacted them. And I guarantee you the answer is the same from when you're 7 years old all the way to when you're like 30 something, 40. Because your essence is the same. So the solutions you bring, you can bring that to any space, right? And so it's first like that limitless is first you got to get out of that mental space that only three things are available and within my reach. And when you realize there are so many possibilities out there, the world is vast, go out there and go for it. Then it's like anything is in your disposal. And especially for our generation now, like you were mentioning, right? We don't have to be in survival anymore. We can go after these things. For some people, it'll take a bit longer, but it doesn't matter as long as you reach it.
So when I think of previous generations of women in my family, there was a characteristic of self-sacrifice, of almost feeling like everybody else's dreams, goals, purposes, everybody else's is more important. And I never saw an example of a woman in my family who put herself first. Why do you think that's so common in our community? And how do we break free from the narratives that are helping us stay there? Like what you mentioned, things like people pleasing, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. Well, first I'll say it's still so present. Sometimes my heart is broken when I speak at certain universities. I'm like, you know, I talk about the narratives I grew up in and I'm like, oh my God, when I hear them, I'm like, the same narratives are still there. And I had an instance not that long ago where somebody put a picture on Instagram, a video, this guy, where he was like, the woman needs to cook for me. And he was doing this whole thing about, and then called her mom so that her mom would yell at her. And it was awful video, but it had hundreds of comments by men and women saying, yes, that's her job, that's her place, she needs to sacrifice, exactly what you're saying. And I remember being one of the first out there going, absolutely not. Because she said no in the video. And I'm like, we need to respect when people say no and have their boundaries and limits. And like, I don't think they realize how traumatizing it is them call her mom, right? But I can tell you, when I put that there, I had like 350 hate comments from my comment, from our community, from women and men. Being like, no, that's what we need to be proud of and our culture and all those things. That's when I have an issue because I'm like, no, that's not part of our culture. Those are limiting beliefs, which is very different. Our culture is vibrant. Our culture is loving. You know, I mean, there's different adjectives we can use, but things that oppress people, that's not culture. That's just like, we need to move through it. That's just oppression.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we need to differentiate that. But there's something in our culture, when you're asking us why, that we tie in whatever limiting belief there is to then we accept it as culture. And then we need to move past that. Because if we did that, then you're saying that when we couldn't vote before as women, that was part of our culture? Absolutely not. Then when women couldn't work? No. So why are we tying then these to our culture as Latinos? No, we can be, those things are evolving. Those things are beliefs that we can change. We can still keep our essence without having women have to sacrifice everything that they're doing. But that requires all of us, right, to use our platforms to show that it's possible. I mean, I'll give you a case even in my own story. My first husband, and again, he's not a, and that, it just wasn't for me, but he was still living in that limiting beliefs. And I remember telling my family, I was like, this doesn't work for me. And I think there are Latino men that there is somebody that will follow me. And I think there is someone that will have the same dreams and aspirations. I do believe that's out there and that likes cooking and taking care of the kids, but is also like committed to their own journey and we can share things. And they were like, you're crazy. You're dreaming too big. Like you're going to end up alone. And we need to stop that. Because then guess what? I did meet him. And of course they were like, oh, but he's like this. And they didn't want to accept him at first. And then they did. But I went with my intuition, was like, no, I'm going to be in this relationship. It's a partnership. We both are aligned in our dreams. We help each other. He takes care of the kids. He cooks, and it doesn't emasculate him, because that's what our culture also does, that if a man takes on a certain adjective that we use for women, that's, oh, he's not a man. That's not true. So it's still prevalent because we're still with these narratives in our mind about what gender should be. And then of course, also, I also think, though, there's a role that we all have, is that sometimes it's easier to hide behind the narrative and be like, I will help you, because to not confront the fear I have of going it after myself. And we have to push through that, because I found myself years ago saying, even blaming my parents, being like, you made me follow this dream and this path, and I could have, instead, I should have done an MBA, I should have done something different, and blaming them instead of reflecting on myself. Wait, no, Esther, you had that choice. You had that choice. It's easier to blame others and hide behind that than actually have the courage to move forward. So it's also us, we need to sit there and go, why are we hiding behind everyone else and helping one else? And what will it take for us to get that impulse to move forward?
Mm-hmm. Yes, y'all, we need to be smashing these patriarchal, antiquated narratives that are really not serving anybody, because they're harming men as much as they're harming women. Like, I think that we need to just keep it 100% real. Like, it's not serving anybody in our community to continue to perpetuate these inequities that are serving literally no one. So if you are the black sheep of the family, you're probably doing something right. Okay, so, you know, another thing that I hear when we talk about kind of starting over, making these transitions, like basically creating a path where none has existed, is this idea of like, oh, that's nice, but it's too late for me. I've been too deep. What do you say to that comment? And do you believe that like it is such a thing as like you're too late to like make a change?
Absolutely not. I can tell you, the majority of my clients do come with me with that, because they're like, it's too late. I'm too old. I'm not in my 20s anymore. Or some are not. I'm like, I'm not in my 30s anymore. I'm like, it just takes 5 years, not even, to do a full transformation on your life. Oh, and that's what I remind them of. 5 years. That's it. We always overestimate what we do. We can do in one, but we underestimate five. And most people give up when they don't see quick results in their first year. But in five, you know, you can transform completely who you are and where you're going and everything. And I've seen it in people, communities, corporates, business, everybody. And I'm like, it's possible, even with myself. In five years, I've drastically changed. But you have to get through that first hump. And then people are like, oh my God, 5 years feels eternal. I'm like, you're only in your 40s. You still have, hopefully, 50 years to go. You're only halfway. If you think 5 years is too long, but what about living what's the cost emotionally of living the same life you have right now for another 40 or 50? Huge. So you have to weigh that. What is the cost if you continue? And I've seen some people who have gotten that cost, you know, later, like, you know, when you're misaligned, your body starts telling you, right? That's when all the health things starts happening. You start getting suffocated, anxiety, right? All those things, your body's then telling you, hey, I need a change. Like, you cannot sustain. And so when you think about, it's not that much time.
And it's going to pass anyway. So it's like, what are you doing? The shit is going to go by. And then 5 years later, you're going to be like, oh, wow, I'm in the exact same fucking place.
Exactly. So it's not too late. I've seen 70-year-olds change their lives. Because it's not too late. They might still have another 20 years. Why not?
Absolutely. And Latino women have some of the highest longevity of any ethnic group. So in case y'all didn't know that, y'all, like, hello. We got time on this earth. Let's make the most of it, please. It's crazy because I have definitely had like that 5-year transformation too, even in my own journey here as a podcaster and all those things. I started my financial independence journey right around like the end of 2016. And by 2021, financially independent, debt-free, had a multiple six-figure business, quit my corporate career. It's like, damn, what focus can do. But it's like, you have to give yourself a reasonable, realistic timeline. And I think what happens for a lot of people is like, they see the social media, instant gratification, get rich quick, blah, blah, blah. And there's no context to like what the person that you're aspiring to be like has had to sacrifice, has had to invest in order to get to where you now see them on the other side. So how do we stay focused on just being realistic about our goals?
Yeah. No, that's a big one too, right? That's like the creating the roadmap. And it has to be realistic to you and your life, right? Like, because like if you, like in my, you know, in my life, right, I was like, okay, so I have the kids, the part, this, you know, all that. I was like, okay, it's going to be a little slower, but then I'm going to be able to stick to it. So I was like, what can I realistically commit to? You know, and so when I work with people, I have this, you know, this workbook where I'm like, let's break down your, so you have your 20-year vision, 10-year vision, and let's look at your 5-year vision. Break that down. What do I need to learn? What's the gap deficit, right? Because sometimes there's also a lot of learning you might need to do. Like for me, I had never used social media because I had a job where I couldn't be on there. So I had to learn, I had to start from zero. And I was like, okay, so it's not going to be realistic that my social media is going to grow in 1 year. It's going to take a lot longer, but that's okay. But what people forget is that the minute you start working on your legacy and on your own limitless life, even if you're doing it on weekends and whatever you are, you still have a job, you're already feeling more in alignment. And that's what people forget. You're already feeling better. You're already feeling aligned because you're doing something that's aligned with you, for the whatever you think is going to change the world, right? It's fueling you. So, but when they do their plan, they want to see everything in 1 year. And I'm like, no, let's choose 3 out of that 5-year thing. Let's divide it into 15 big goals. And we're just going to do 3 of those per year. If you happen to make it faster, amazing. But let's add buffer time because you could get sick. Your parents could get sick and people don't put that buffer time either. And then when they don't make it or like, oh my God, I'm a failure. No, let's add in those buffers from now. Add in that resilience. Now I have this thing like if what you've overcome, you're going to keep overcoming. So instead of waiting to use your toolkit when you hit rock bottom, let's put it in your day to day, right? If you're someone who has suffered, I had like suffered before from depression, right? I was like, I'm not going to go there again. So I wake up my day and I'm like, I read my things, my testimonials that I need to do, keeps me even keel, even through the ups and downs of entrepreneurship. But that's going to be different for everyone. But you need to integrate that in your everyday. And that's going to keep you focused. That's going to keep you motivated. That's going to remind you of where I'm going because you're incorporating everything that's unique to you, works for you, and in a timeline that's realistic for your situation. It's different if you're full-time in it, different than if you're working only on weekends. It's different if you only have an hour a day, right? But either way, it's fine. Every timeline's different.
Yeah. Not everybody's 24 hours is the same. That's why I hate like the bro marketing that's like, we all have 24 hours. I'm like, no, my 24-hour day is not the same as somebody who has 3 children, who has a 12-hour day nursing career, who is a single parent, who is supporting other family members financially. Like there's a lot of shit that you need to be realistic about as far as like your time commitment, your financial resources, the support systems that you have. And it's not about like seeing, oh, they have it so much easier. It's about refocusing on yourself and realizing like that shit, whatever they got going on is really irrelevant to my situation. And so why am I focusing on that as like the pinnacle of success?
Exactly. And you're also, it's like an analysis of your own time audit, right? You can make more time and create more spaces depending on what you are doing and your own situation. And that's unique to you. Exactly. And there's no, because even when I was like a single in graduate school, I was constantly helping all my family members and everyone else, right?
Yeah, because you're available, right? Because you have no real responsibilities.
Exactly. And so I had to do then the work of, wait, I need to limit this in my whole life.
And my time is valuable, even if it's not being spent on taking care of other people.
Exactly. And that you're not selfish, you're not being ungrateful. And it's actually like that mask exercise. If you help yourself first, and you know, being the first, you can help other people more later, right? And seeing that as it's a type of service. Giving to yourself is a type of service.
Absolutely. So do you think that the American dream is dead?
I do. I want it to die. That's why I have it crossed out. I also think we've distorted the definition. The original definition of the American dream in the dictionary is not a bad one. It's about opportunity. It's very positive. It doesn't say anything about these metrics. It doesn't say anything about being married or having a job by a certain age and all those conversations we've now turned to Thanksgiving and Christmas, right? Tienes novio, have you gotten the promotion? All those chisme things. Yes. And that's, you know, like I have, you know, similar to you as I follow your journey, right? I have an investment in Punta Cana, but I'm like, I don't own one for me. It's not part of my dream. I like investment properties, but not for me to live. But that's why it's different for everyone. So I think the cookie cutter American dream, how we've defined it in society, is dead. And it's also a stat I give is that 4 million Latinos suffered through depression. And like a lot of them from suicidal ideation as well, right? Because the people who are making the American dream are miserable because they're like, I just did everything my parents told me to do. And now who am I? And then there's the people who haven't made it. And now it's harder and harder with this economy, right? And then they're like frustrated and they're like, well, I haven't made these metrics, but maybe it's not the metrics that's important. And also like, okay, you can't own a house in the US, but you can own one in the DR or you can own other places. Like we need to get away from it's only works if it's in this model. And that's when I think it's dead. Like all of us have different paths. Does that even make us happy? And I think it's time to just go after what the life we want to create, because when we're doing that, we're more there and present for others. And as a kid, we wanted to change the world and then we lost that. And I really think if we were actually doing what's aligned with us, we can make more of a difference.
Mm, I love it. Okay, let's talk about the book. First of all, how did this manifest itself? How did you go from a burnt out diplomat to now an incredible life coach, speaker, and now author? And tell us what we can look forward to by picking up a copy.
Yeah. Well, one, you're going to get my full juicy story.
And if y'all thought that we went over it in this show.
Oh, there's way more.
We just scratched the surface.
Way more. I think everyone tells me it's a page turner. Yeah, get some popcorn. Because it's crazy. And that was something that I was scared to add, but it's all in there. Everything is there. So first you get my story, which I think gives context as to how I went from that. Well, how I went from hustling my whole life, right? But for the wrong thing. And then how I found an alignment and how I got the courage to go after it, right? And then what bothered me always was, as a kid, my parents couldn't afford bookstores, right? So they took me to they would drop me off at the library, or I could walk to the library. And there is where I read all those travel books I was telling you about, or I was like, I'm going to go visit all these places. But then I would read also these self-help books. And of course, they were mainly about white men, but I would read them. And what bothered me is they would all talk about purpose and purpose. And I was still left going, what is purpose? Like, so that's when I confused it for the American dream. I was like, it must be what everyone is telling me that I have to do. And that's my purpose in life. And my purpose in life is to also help my parents. And it's not like I don't help my parents. I definitely want to make that clear. But it's more that there was no one really telling you how to discover it. What are the questions you need to ask yourself, right? There was theories, and then there was the Japanese. So in this one, I tell you all the questions are there. If you answer them, you're going to be clear on what's your why, what's your North Star, everything, even your unique value add to the world. You know, I have some people like, I don't know my uniquenesses. Well, I got the questions there for you. What's your uniqueness? What do you add? And then how do you create that roadmap? And then how do you keep it going? So it's like part memoir, but also part, hey, the whole how-to. And then I have an accompanying workbook that goes with it that you can go even deeper. And what's cool about it is that purpose is individual, but mission and vision is family, communities, groups, countries, companies. So you can take those same questions and ask. Because one of the things that bothered me as a diplomat, you know, in international development, so I was doing humanitarian work in other countries, is that they would all come and be like, I know what you need. Let me save you. And I was like, no. They know what they need. We are just the facilitators of it. And it's the same with people and communities. I was like, what is their mission and vision? What do they want? Let's not come in with what we think they need. Let's ask them and then let's give them what they need and want. And so it's the same things. And in our families, like taking the time, you know, like even now, like, you know how we're saying, we're like this generation that's more open, you know, my own kids, I'm like, what do you want? What's your own purpose? What's your own mission and vision in life? And sometimes it's hard to know how to even start those conversations. So like this workbook, even with your partner, like my husband and I do that together. Like, what is your vision? What's my vision? How do we create a joint legacy together to align? And I wish I would have had those questions in my dating life when I was in the 20s, because I would just ask instead, like,
oh, what do you do for work?
Comment. Yeah. We have this in common. I'm not going to be broke, right? And that was totally the wrong thing. It was more about, what is your vision? What's your aspiration? Because if it's not big like mine, then we're not aligned. And so that's what you can expect. And like, so I always, that's why I wrote it. I wanted to give everyone this how-to, because this is what I needed. And, you know, they say your pain is the thing you create. And it's what I needed in life. And I still use it. And I wanted it to be accessible too, right? So I have like the print version, but I still keep a Kindle at 99 cents because I do a lot of work with students. And so I never want someone who didn't like me, who had no money, not to have access to it. So, you know, and people were like, oh, that's going to dilute your brand. I'm like, well, part of my brand is accessibility, right? So I keep both at the electronic version for that because I want everyone to be able to figure that out for themselves, you know, and especially as Latinos, we deserve this. We need to do this and go after it.
Absolutely. There are other communities who have been doing this personal development, self-help work for a very long time. And I think it's about time that we also get into a routine of just like thinking about something more than just like the everyday tasks that are in front of you and just like higher level thinking.
Exactly. And then we'll change the way we talk about ourselves too, right? Like, let's not talk about ourselves as tasks, you know, and especially to all the Latinas out there, you are not a supporter, assistant. No, you're a leader. You're a trailblazer and you have this great thing about you. And so unpack it in that and introduce yourself that way and see yourself that way. You're more than just the logistics things that we have to sometimes do.
Yeah. So now being on the other side of this transition, what would you tell your former self to anticipate knowing what you know now?
I think before I thought work had become my life, my other job. And so I invested even my own time in creating relationships and networks and community there. And then when I got out, I realized they were my colleagues, but that wasn't my community. That was hard because I had invested so much time into personal growth and development for all these people in the org. And when I got out, I expected, oh, everyone's going to support me and champion, at least in that regard. I knew my family wouldn't, but I thought at least there. And no, it was just colleagues. I mean, it was great that I did that, but that was it. And so I didn't anticipate having that clash in me. And then, but then it was such a good lesson learned that you can have supporters, you can have colleagues, but there's a difference between that and champions, and that you have to actively also create community. And community means you adding value to them, you know, and getting value back, but that it also, you have to be intentional. Like, so what I did was I was like, I need a community, I need to find it. So my first community was a group of Australian women, right? I was like, okay, I'm going to join their community, right? And they were amazing. And then I was like, let me join another one. And then it was like, you know, I made some friends in Zimbabwe and then I got to travel and meet them. And it's also thinking outside the box. Maybe your communities, maybe it's not in your neighborhood, but we live in a digital world now. There's community. There's someone who's interested in the same stuff like you somewhere in the world, but you have to get out there and you have to put time and effort because the time and effort you put into that is what you get back. And I didn't anticipate having to start all over in a way. Like I still had like, you know, some champions, but really start over with like my core people who I was seeing every day and that it would be lonely at first, yeah. You know? And I wasn't expecting the loneliness, but now I'm not lonely. But again, it's about what you put in is what you get. I put a lot of time into building community and that was the lesson.
Yeah, I think that's really insightful. And it's one of those things that I also didn't anticipate of just understanding that you will outgrow your environment. You will outgrow the people around you. And there is a grief that comes from that. But it's also just an understanding of like people's capacity to be there for you will change just depending on how the relationship with them changes, right? And I think it's an important reminder too that like your friends at work are not really your friends. Your manager is not your family. Like these are transactional relationships for the most part that are dependent on that environment. And like once you're out of that environment, it's just going to be a natural thing that people cycle in and out.
Exactly. And I love what you said. Like it's true, you outgrow your circles and they're just not ready yet. Like at first, what I was doing, some of my family and that circle didn't understand it, you know, but now they've come around. So it's also like I developed empathy, you know, yeah. I was like, you know what, they just don't get it because again, it's being the first.
Yeah. It's that the capacity to understand something that you've never seen is just going to be different for different people. So
yeah. And it challenges their own mental models.
Yes. Okay. So for somebody who is in that point where they know something has to change, but they are now overwhelmed with that prospect and they don't know what's one thing that they can do right now to start to reinvent themselves.
So that one thing you can do, I would say, is pick up my workbook, like the exercises, guide you one piece at a time, and it's not overwhelming, right? It's like just thinking about, it's taking time for you. What is my life like? If I were to pass away today, what does it look like? What do I want it to look like? Even things I have questions like, if you had unlimited resources, what problem would you solve and how? Like taking the time to really unpack who you are. So I would say first thing is grab it. Just play with the questions. Like, don't think about how you're, people start freaking out because they're like, I don't know. I don't even want to think about my vision because you're already going into how would I even do it? And I'm like, okay, everyone just pause. Right now is not the time of how am I going to do it? That will come when you start. Even I don't have, even now, like in my, I don't have all the answers. I don't know. I have a vision that I'm going to have lunch with Jose Andres in 20 years.
Oh my God. Yes.
And then we're going to be doing this humanitarian stuff. And I have my own visions of 20 years. I don't know how I'm going to have lunch with this guy, but it's part of my vision. I already know that's what I want. So that gives me an idea of the scale I need to go, of the, maybe the types of events I should go to. But you see how that comes later, right? It's more about what is that vision for you? Start there. And then that vision, and then I want you to be like, believe that that vision is possible. And then going, okay, let me write it down. Make it tangible and start talking to people about it. And hey, if they're not your champion, you can come to my page. You know, you go to your page. We'll champion you. We'll champion your dreams. We don't think your dreams are crazy. But just start there because the rest will come. And I really believe that it comes. And as you start thinking about it more, you start researching it more. You start figuring out, how do other people get there? Where can I go? And your body starts aligning to that energy.
I love that advice. I think it's a reminder of what we spoke about earlier in the episode of just like, remind yourself of all the things that you've been able to accomplish. Remind you of all of the challenges you've been able to overcome, because you have so much more evidence of what you are capable of than you probably even understand. And sometimes something as simple as writing it down gives you that perspective that you need to realize like, oh shit, look at me. I've actually done some things. And this is not even as scary as some of the shit I've already been through.
Exactly. And if they ask their friends, you know, we said earlier, their five friends in their lifetime, they're going to get these beautiful testimonials. I'm all about that. We need to change. Like, let's not wait till funerals. Tell the person on their birthday. Tell them on their birthday how they impacted you and how. Because I think people don't get that. Even when they do the X, when I tell them to do exercise and you can say, blame it on me. They're like, oh, I feel weird asking someone. We need to change that, right? So ask the person, blame it on me, and you'll see what you get back. And you're going to be like, wow, I've done all those things. I've impacted someone's life that way. Yes, you have. So imagine what you could do. Take it forward and do your own vision so much more and impact so many.
Yeah, I love it. Esther, this has been an incredible conversation. For people who want to find out more about your work, pick up a copy of your book, interact with you, where's the best place for us to find you and all that stuff?
Yeah, so I'm on Instagram, Be Act Change. And the name is because I'm like, I want you to be your true self, like authentic self, not no more code switching, no more being unauthentic, you, because you got to take action on this and then change. I really think if we all do, we change the world. So that's the Be Act Change on Instagram. And then I'm also on LinkedIn. You can find me wherever. And I'm very responsive. I'll get back to you in a few days, but I respond to every message I get. So yes. So please connect.
Absolutely. And please make sure to keep, pick up a copy of the book.
Forgot about that book. It's available on Amazon, Barnes and Nobles, any of your favorite retailers, you can grab it.
And the accompanying workbook, because we love a good workbook that so we don't have to like mess up the pages. Exactly. We can pass this on to a friend. Maybe if you are part of a book club, recommend this book. We need to support Latina authors because we are a fraction of a percentage. And so congratulations on this incredible milestone. Congratulations on having the audacity to question the American dream and decide to redefine it for yourself and now help others do the same.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
And thanks for what you're doing too.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you are ready to take your dinero to the next level, sign up for our free 14-page guide, The Financially Lit Latina, the ultimate blueprint for becoming poderosa with your dinero. This 14-page guide includes our best tips on money mindset, budgeting, debt repayment, career, investing, financial independence, side hustles, and more. And you can get it completely free. So to get your copy of The Financially Lit Latina, just head over to YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com/start and start transforming your dinero story today. Until next time, stay empowered, stay inspired, and stay poderosa. On the Yo Quiero Dinero podcast and associated entities, all information provided is for general information purposes only and does not constitute accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the content or information found here without first seeking appropriate advice from an accountant, financial planner, lawyer, or other professional. We assume no responsibility for information contained on this podcast and associated entities and disclaim all liability with respect to such information, including but not limited to any liability for errors, inaccuracies, omissions, or misleading or defamatory statements. Usage of this podcast and associated contents constitutes an explicit understanding and acceptance of the terms of this disclaimer.